The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this particular week. EDU is in education. For those of you who have not been listening to the show super long, we're doing two shows a week. We do a Q&A show where we mostly answer questions emailed in to us, submitted to us for the show. EDU shows are kind of singular topic-focused shows of a variety of different topics. Today, we're going to delve a little bit into a topic that was prompted by an email, which, no, that doesn't make it a Q&A show, but we're going to talk a little bit about trust as beneficiary of IRAs, and I know that you all have heard us talk about those things fairly recently, but that's because there's been and are proposed changes in the rules that are affecting people that have trusts in their lives. And in this particular case, we received an email about a person that had an existing trust and was curious about the effects on that trust and its behavior related to the SECURE Act. Before we start talking about it, I want to remind everyone we are not attorneys. We are not giving specific legal advice, but this particular email, and they included the copy of their trust. Not that we're going to review people's trusts on a regular basis, but it allowed us to dig through the trust and have a few items that were identified that would give you food for thought or at least watch out for certain things within the trust that might not be particularly compatible with the SECURE Act. So, Jim, thank you for joining me. You have actually, I haven't seen the trust yet, so you'll be walking us through this for the most part. But
well, before we get excited that a trust, he sent us three pages, which is a wise move, okay. Because if he sent me the whole trust, I would have never opened it and looked at it. And I'm glad you mentioned, and we want everyone to know, listener who sent this EDU topic and listeners who are listening to this EDU topic, we're not attorneys, and we don't pretend to be one, and we certainly don't give legal advice because we can't. But what I can do is read his email, Chris, and some of the things he's saying, and then when I look at the language of the trust, share with our listeners if I feel there's any hot potatoes. Is that the saying, mm-hmm. Hot potatoes? You know, something that's not good and you don't expect to see it? Is it a hot potato?
Probably call it red flags. Hot potato is something you...
Where'd I get a hot potato from?
I don't know. Have you had lunch yet?
Yeah, I did. Mm. I had a chicken sandwich. Anyways, I have no idea, but I thought the saying was a hot potato, that you find a hot potato in something. I don't know, folks. No. I'm trying. It's a long day. But I think it should be a saying. If it's not a saying,
it could be related to hot potatoes because you want to get rid of one of those really fast. No, you don't find. I mean, if you treat it like a hot potato, like you want to get rid of it really fast, you let go of it, you get rid of it
because they're
hot. Away from you because it's hot. Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so whatever, a hot potato or a cold carrot, who cares? What I want to do is read his question and things that. Oh, that's a much better analogy instead of a damn hot potato. See if there's anything in here that makes me go, Don't we have that? We used to have that. Things that make me go,
Things that make you go,
Exactly. I like that one. That's
better than hot potato.
Yeah, that's better than hot potato. And I want to just kind of run through his email and what he points out to his listeners of the reasons why he created a trust in the first place to be beneficiary of his IRA and how he made it in 2016 before the SECURE Act. And he read through this language and he feels this language is suitable under the SECURE Act and that nothing needs to be done. I disagree. I think he should go back to his estate planning attorney, and I'll read his email in a second where he says he will most likely do that. And I feel he should talk to this attorney about some of the things that I'm going to mention. And again, if you are an attorney listening to this or a good estate planning attorney listening to this, if I or more likely Chris says something that's not right, please feel free to point out to Chris that he's not right. And Chris is spelled C-H-R-I-S. Just want to make that known to everyone. Even if the words came out of my mouth, it's still most likely Chris who made the error for not correcting me in the first place.
Correct? Oh, I like how you did that. Wow.
Your job is to correct me in the first place.
So if I don't catch it and correct it, ultimately I take the blame for
exactly.
it being wrong.
So,
okay, I see how this works.
Exactly. So you can point out to Chris that he made a mistake by not correcting me when I said this, that, or the other thing. But all jokes aside, folks, we're not attorneys. But there are a few things in his email and a few things in this trust that did make me go, And I think he should bring those up to his attorney. And anyone who's listening to this, who's contemplating creating a trust to be beneficiary of their IRA, or they have a family member who has a trust that is beneficiary of their IRA, they may want to kind of look through their document as well and read the language in the trust, which is what the gentleman gave me. Remember, Chris, a trust, and listeners, a trust isn't anything magical. It's a piece of paper or several pieces of paper with a bunch of words on it. And depending on what the words say, dictates what happens to the asset that is going to be titled to the trust. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And one thing to remember, folks, when you create a trust to be beneficiary of the IRA, let me just design this in your head so you understand what's happening. So many people think when the IRA owner dies that the IRA magically just goes into the trust. It stays in IRA and it just jumps inside the trust. And the way something gets put into a trust is simply by retitling that asset. You want to put a house in a trust, you retitle the house to the trust. You want to put an IRA in the trust, you retitle the IRA to the trust. And if you do that, you just screwed up. And you just caused that entire IRA to be distributed. An IRA never gets titled to the trust. An IRA instead, Chris, is what?
It is the trust is the
beneficiary is, yes.
of the IRA.
Correct. The IRA never gets physically titled to the trust. It's the surest way to blow up an IRA is to title it to a trust. An IRA is IRD to the IRS. Your IRA is income, folks. Income is not owned by the trust. Income should have been taxed to you while you were alive. It never was. That's why they call it income with respect to a decedent. They know you're going to die someday. So an IRA is income. It does not go get titled to the trust. What happens is the trust is beneficiary, as Chris said, to the IRA. And when money or income comes out of the IRA, it goes into the trust. And then it sits in there and it'll either be taxed to high heaven. If you listen to this podcast, you know that. Trusts pay the highest marginal rate in existence, right now 37%, once they receive $13,500 of income. You put $100,000 from an IRA into a trust and you're going to lose nearly 37% of it all to taxes. So we've gone over this ad nauseum in the past, Chris, but do remember, folks, picture this in your head. The trust is just beneficiary of the IRA. The IRA continues to exist at the death of the owner. It's just that the second they die, the trust becomes beneficiary. How is that accomplished? You will name the trust on the IRA beneficiary form as the primary beneficiary. Does that all make sense, Chris?
So far, so good.
Perfect. And then remember, the trust has to qualify to be beneficiary of an IRA because an IRA has to have a human as beneficiary. If you want to be able to get favorable, I hate to use that word because they're so less favorable after the Secure Act, but if your IRA wants to get favorable treatment after your death, you want to make sure the beneficiary of that IRA is a human with a pulse. So you could name a tree, you can name a dog, you can name a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, but they're not a human with a pulse. But the IRS has said if you name a trust as beneficiary of an IRA and it meets certain certain requirements, it's legal under state law, it's irrevocable at your death. I always forget the third one.
Irrevocable at your death. I think you said you meant that.
What did I say?
I thought you said revocable, but
No, it's irrevocable at your death.
Just wanted to make sure.
Legal in the state law, irrevocable at your death. I always forget the third. Oh, all beneficiaries are immediately identifiable. And the one that blows it up the most, a copy of the trust is delivered to the IRA custodian by when, Chris?
October 1st of the year following the death of the IRA owner.
Add 30 to that.
October 31st, that's right, Halloween.
Yes, Halloween. Yeah. Halloween. That's why I said it's coming up. Halloween. When I will be Mr. Potato Head in Cincinnati, Ohio. But after the death, a copy of the trust has to also be delivered to the IRA custodian by October 31st following the IRA owner's death. Or if everything else checked out, it's irrevocable after death, legal under state law, and all beneficiaries are immediately identifiable. Even if all three of those, Chris, are in there, if your trustee, whoever you named, delivers it November 1st, not going to work. But even if it qualifies as a beneficiary of an IRA, it will never be considered a human. And keep that in mind as I read this gentleman's email and what the trust says. Okay, so he begins. Hi, Jim and Chris. Your podcast has become my favorite financial podcast to listen to. Jim, you have a way of teaching English in a way that... you have a way of teaching that is very compelling to me. You have high energy and high yield. Chris, you're boring. Your dry wit and sarcasm is a perfect balance. He didn't put the "your boring" part in. I did.
Dry wit and sarcasm could be boring, yes.
Well, you do have dry wit and sarcasm.
True.
Okay, he begins. I am married, age 42, and I have three minor children. I've been listening to your recent podcasts, noting the various potential tax problems of the Secure Act. For those of us who name a trust as a 401k or IRA beneficiary, hearing your thoughts caused me to go get my trust and check the documents. After reading the trust, I have convinced myself that our 2016 trust is worded in a way that gives my trustee flexibility to grant distributions to my children without a huge tax bomb at the end of 10 years. So let me pause there for a second, folks, and explain a little bit of what he's saying or going on there. So he says, after reading his trust, he's convinced himself that his 2016 trust is worded correctly. That's mistake number one. Don't ever try to convince yourself.
Convince yourself, yeah.
Based on what you hear on our podcast or any podcast. We're not attorneys and neither are you, listener. This trust was created in 2016 out of a totally different set of laws and rules that did get turned upside down after January 1st of 2020 when the Secure Act passed. And I'll point out some of that when I read through your trust document. So even though you've convinced yourself it's fine, I still would consider going back to the attorney and chatting with them a little bit about the trust and get their opinion on what they think. Then he says he believes it's worded in a way that will give his trustee flexibility to grant distributions to his children without a huge tax bomb. There's a lot in that, and I don't want to get too deep into the way he's wording it, Chris, but the way he put flexibility, if there is flexibility to the trustee, Chris, to maybe or maybe not send a distribution from the IRA, because remember, folks, we said this, the trust is just beneficiary of the IRA. We've used this analogy in the past. The trust is acting as a one-way conduit from the IRA. Money will pass into the trust, but no one else can go through the trust and into the IRA. It slams shut and protects the IRA. And when money comes out, it flows through and into the trust. He's saying he thinks, Chris, his language in the trust document gives the trustee flexibility to grant distributions to his children without a huge tax bomb. If you give any type of flexibility to the trustee, what type of trust does that become, Chris? A conduit or a discretionary?
That's a discretionary trust because you're granting the trustee discretion to control what happens with the trust.
You give the trustee flexibility to say, hey, when the money comes out of the IRA, you can pass it to the kids or not. If that's what you mean by flexibility, listener, and that's how I took that word, Chris, flexibility, it's to me, he's thinking it's going to allow the trustee to pass it out if need be to avoid taxation or keep it in the trust. If that's the case, and you built that kind of flexibility, you now have a discretionary trust and not what we call a conduit trust. Conduit trust, there's no flexibility. Conduit trust says the trustee must take the required minimum distribution. And conduit trusts were very popular when the stretch IRA, prior to the Secure Act on January 1st, when a non-spouse beneficiary could keep that IRA, Chris, open for the rest of their life expectancy. So if someone inherited it at 40, they're liable to be able to keep it around for another 40, 45, 50 years. And they wanted the ability for the required distribution every year for that 40, 45, 50-year period to just flow right through. And they would make a conduit trust where the trustee had to flow the money through. But that conduit trust would act as a protection valve, if you would, folks, to keep anyone from getting back into the IRA. That one-way valve goes closed. He seems to want flexibility, Chris, which creates a discretionary trust, which creates a whole host of other issues that we've talked about on past shows. So the first thing I want to point out to this listener is, what do you mean by you think it grants you flexibility? Are you looking for that flexibility? Do you want a discretionary trust or a conduit trust? Conduit trust, no choice. It must pass through that required distribution to the child. Discretionary gives the trustee the ability to hold money in the trust, even though it'll be taxed to high heaven. The highest effective marginal rate after $13,500 moves from the IRA into the trust, anything above $13,500 is going to be taxed right now at 37% federal, soon to be 39.6, plus whatever state and local income taxes may be. So you could lose, depending on if you live in New York, California, or Illinois, you could lose close to 50%, Chris, if your trust is discretionary and holds assets and doesn't pass it out. So keep that in mind, listeners. So then he goes on. Can you please take a look at the excerpt from my trust that I have attached and let me know if you see any problems if I list it as beneficiary of an IRA or if you think I should have it revised. And yes, yes, I know. I should call my estate attorney, and I probably will. But based on the hours and hours of your podcast that I've listened and soaked in, I trust your judgment more. Well, there's mistake number two. Trusting my judgment more than hopefully a very good estate planning attorney. I think a lot of what you're asking, you should be jotting down, and a lot of what I'm saying, you really need to decide, listener, if you want a discretionary or a conduit trust, sometimes called non-discretionary. Again, the non-discretionary or conduit trust passes the money right through. And as you're going to see under the Secure Act, that could be a huge problem. If you want a discretionary trust, it helps protect the asset. You would use a discretionary trust when you not only want to control access to the trust, to the IRA, you also want to protect the IRA, especially since the Supreme Court, Chris, ruled with all nine saying
The inherited IRA is not a retirement account.
It's not a retirement account,
so it's not getting the regular protections that a retirement account would.
Yes, I knew that, but what I was trying to see is if you could guess the word I'm thinking.
Unanimous.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. See, I knew that word, folks. I just wanted to see if Chris did, but no sense me trying to say that word. They ruled all together that an inherited IRA is not a retirement account and receives no bankruptcy protection. And that has been read to also mean no general creditor protection. So a trust could protect, Chris, but the cost of that protection is to keep money inside the trust when it comes out of the IRA. And that will cost buka bucks in taxes since it's considered income, not an asset. Right. Even if you distribute the asset out in kind, from the IRA into the trust. In other words, you don't have to sell the investments. You can just distribute the investments out. It's still going to be taxed as income. Highest marginal bracket after $13,500 goes into that trust. So I would first determine in your mind, listener, you explain in a second why you created this trust. You and your wife need to sit there and ask yourselves, do you want it conduit or do you want it discretionary? That's the first thing. Okay. So then he goes on. And to answer your question about why we set up the trust in the first place, my wife and I felt that if we went through the estate planning process, it would be a good exercise in forcing us to choose a guardian to care for our children in the unlikely event we both pass away in a common accident. Let me pause there, Chris. When you heard that, you've got six kids. When you heard that about naming a guardian, let me ask you, and this isn't rhetorical, I'm being serious. Mm-hmm. Where does creating a trust as beneficiary of an IRA help with naming a guardian?
It doesn't, but maybe it just forces you to interact with your estate planning attorney who will then
sell you a trust.
talk to you about some estate planning issues outside of a trust. I don't know how they connect those two together necessarily, but
any parent who is concerned and knows you need to name a guardian in your will to care for your children, or generally the state will appoint one. And I often joke with people, figure in your mind the worst possible family member, and that's who the court will probably name. So a lot of parents will name guardianship. And I think this couple had a very good idea. They have three minor children, and they thought, this will force us to do it. Let's go see an estate planning attorney. I don't think they went to the estate planning attorney thinking they needed a trust. If you need to name guardianship, that's something totally different. But also keep in mind, folks, When you name a guardian in your will, it is a suggestion. The court does not have to do it.
True.
Keep that in mind. It is merely dead people saying, here's who we would like to take care of our children. The courts will still decide. If you don't name anyone, then the courts are going to pick probably the worst possible family member you ever imagined. If you do name someone, great. And at least it gives the court guidance into what you were thinking. But other family members can make a stink and a beef and present a case and perhaps get awarded custody, even though that's not who you named as guardian. So do True. Keep that in mind. But I always say it's more of a suggestion than a requirement. But again, if you went in, and I'm not trying to read anything into this, and the attorney might be wonderful, but you went in to buy guardianship and you got sold something else that has nothing to do with guardianship. Even if you created this trust, and even if you named the IRA as beneficiary of the trust, you still would have had to have done guardianship. Mm-hmm. So now you got more than you went in for. So that's the first thing that kind of jumped out at me, and I just want to mention that. Then they continue on. My wife and I also wanted to make sure, and I'm going to let you, Chris, tell our listeners the first thing that popped into your mind when I finished this sentence, okay? Mm-hmm. My wife and I also wanted to make sure our children wouldn't have to spend a ton of money on attorney fees in probate court after we die.
Well, as it relates to an IRA or retirement account, those do not pass through probate, but rather through the beneficiary designation form. So here again, I think if this was one of the reasons why they set up a trust to play beneficiary to the retirement accounts, that's a little misguided. That's not a good reason to set up the trust because it would have passed to the kids and you could split it up on the beneficiary designation form however you wanted, dole it out to these different beneficiaries if you have multiple kids, and it would pass outside of probate naturally without the cost and complexity and possible tax consequences of it being involved with a trust. That's my first knee-jerk reaction.
Absolutely. It's kind of like this, folks. Did you ever hear... You should never put an annuity inside an IRA because an annuity is already taxed. Excuse me, an IRA is already tax deferred. You hear that all the time. Now, there can be any number of reasons to put an annuity inside an IRA, but you hear a lot, especially from AUM style investment advisors who want to keep money under their purview, if you will. We'll say one of the reasons you would never put an annuity or take your IRA from them and put it inside an annuity is you already have tax deferral with the IRA. Now, I don't want to get too deep into that. We could do that on another EDU show. But it's the same thing here, folks, though. That argument could be used here. If your aim was to keep your children as far as your 401k and IRA go from having to deal with expenses, they're in Hawaii, this couple's from Hawaii, and he said attorney's fees and probate cost a ton of money. So I'm just guessing probate might be difficult in Hawaii. I have no idea. So you went out and created a trust. You put an item, the IRA, that already passes by right of law and named it as beneficiary of an account that passes by right of law. You don't need to do that. It's like putting an annuity inside an IRA. It's already tax deferred. An IRA or a 401k passes by right of law, like Chris said. Who is named on the beneficiary form? As I said, how do you get the IRA into the trust? Well, you don't. You get the IRA to be, excuse me, you get the trust to be beneficiary of the IRA on what? The IRA beneficiary form. That's where you name the annuity. Had you named just your kids on the IRA beneficiary form or the 401k beneficiary form, they would never have to go through probate at all.
Well, for purposes of those assets, those accounts, for probate issues.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I'm guessing your attorney for the other assets, like Chris just pointed out, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, real estate, vehicles, mm-hmm. jewelry, things of that nature. They may have wanted a trust to handle those. That only works, though, if you actually title the assets to the trust, if you still own your house in your name or a bank account in your name and it hasn't been titled to the trust, it's still going to have to go through probate. So you do have to keep that in mind. So again, some of the reasons you told me you considered a trust aren't enough, Chris, for me to say, oh my God, yes, you need this trust. Never once did you say you wanted protection and control, which to me, hands down, are the only two reasons to use a trust. Protection and control, and or control is how I should word it. As far as naming a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, or using a trust in general for anything. Now, I wouldn't say for anything, because there are ways to use trusts for other items, especially in tax planning side for estate taxes. Not income taxes, folks, because trusts are terrible for income taxes. So for the reasons he's listed, Chris, there was none that still made me go, oh my goodness, yes, this makes perfect sense. So again, I'm just a little hesitant, but that's his email. Then he sent us the trust documents. I'm just going to read through a couple of, I'm not going to read the whole thing because we're probably going to run out of time, but it's very short, just two pages, technically two pages plus one paragraph. It's not that deep, but let me just read some of the language. And then listener, you can decide if you would like to talk to your attorney about this language and maybe make some changes or not. So the first part is the rights of the trustee. I'm not going to get too deep into it. It's a lot of legal mumbo jumbo, but it begins outlining or laying out what the trustee can do. And one of the parts says, my trustee may make a qualified disclaimer of any qualified retirement benefits or non-qualified annuity benefits payable to my trust. There's nothing wrong with that at all. What does a disclaimer, what's the whole point of it? What is it meant, Chris, by disclaimer? Why don't you just explain that to our listeners?
Well, essentially, you can think of it as if you're named as a beneficiary or you have, you're going to be receiving something through someone's will, etc., you don't have the legal obligation to take what's being directed toward you. So I like to compare it to stepping out of the way, right? There's something coming at you and you can step out of the way and let whoever's standing behind you take it instead. That's what disclaiming is. You don't get to control it as it goes past you. You don't get to touch it, affect it, redirect it, any of that. But you do have the right to say, nope, I'm going to step back. I don't want this thing that's coming at me. Now, we're talking here specifically about having a beneficiary named on the retirement accounts. But just because you're named as the beneficiary, you are not legally obligated to take it. You can absolutely step out of the way or disclaim. There's a variety of reasons why one might want to do that. But that's what disclaiming is all about.
Exactly. But a few things to keep in mind, listener. Hopefully your attorney pointed these out to you. You've given the right of the trustee to disclaim the IRA. So remember, what happens at your death or the death of both of you, because I would assume, and I'm guessing here, and he doesn't mention this, Chris, but I would guess that his, well, actually, no, I'm not going to go so far as into guessing this. In fact, because I don't think it's done that way. You'll see in a minute where I'm going. You probably think what I originally thought, Chris, which was, let's say the IRA is his. He named his wife as primary beneficiary of his IRA, and then the trust as contingent. Wouldn't you think that's what he probably did?
That's common, because that gives your spouse the first right to accept the and become the beneficiary of the IRA.
The human
beneficiary, yeah. And but has the option in certain circumstances to then step aside and disclaim and let it go past you to the contingent.
Right. Chris said there's times when disclaiming would work. When I get to the next set of paragraphs, I don't think that's the way they had this set up at all. I think they had a marital trust as primary. beneficiaries, you'll see in a minute as I read through, I don't know. He doesn't tell me how the beneficiary form of the IRA was filled out. In normal cases, you want, because you said, listener, you did this in case you and your spouse died at the same time or in the same accident. Most people who are married want to name their spouses as primary beneficiary of the IRA. Now, in a blended family situation, that's often done differently, which we won't get into. Let's just pretend it's a non-blended family situation, Chris. Husband and wife, couple of kids, three kids in his case. You would name the spouse as beneficiary of each other's IRAs and contingent beneficiary, a trust, which would pay to the children. That's how it's normally done, 9 times out of 10. And where would disclaiming come in? Now, one spouse passes away, and the other spouse has 9 months to decide if they want the entire IRA or only a portion of it. And anything they don't want, they can disclaim. But here's the key, listener and listeners. When you disclaim as a beneficiary, first, you can receive no benefit prior to disclaiming. You can't start taking money out of the IRA and then say, I don't want the rest. The only thing you can take out is the first year's required minimum distribution, if required. And we won't get into when that would happen. But you can take that out without losing the ability to disclaim. But if you take anything else out, you cannot disclaim. But when it comes to disclaiming, you don't have to disclaim at all. You can disclaim 90% of it, 100% of it, 10% of it, or none of it. Doesn't matter. Anything you don't want must go to whoever was named as contingent beneficiary. You cannot choose who it goes to. So hopefully, if disclaiming planning was important and the language, Chris, is in the rights of the trustee, if the attorney put that in there, either it's because it's boilerplate and the attorney didn't pay attention to it, or they actually did talk about disclaiming planning and they specifically wanted to put that in. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes.
And if it was done that way, folks and listener, please remember, the attorney should have also told you who you name as contingent beneficiaries on the IRA beneficiary form is crucial.
Yes, absolutely crucial, because the trustee only has the ability to step aside. It's like an oncoming car. You can't control it. You can't affect it. You can't do anything to it. All you can do is step aside. Technically, you can step aside from part of it, which you couldn't do with an oncoming car, but you get the idea. You've got to have it named. It's not like you can leave it up to the trustee to then redirect it to who the trustee deems is worthy or appropriate or most efficient or tax efficient, etc. So you've got to have it set up ahead of time.
Exactly. Then there's a section on here not holding the trustee liable. We won't get into that. Standard boilerplate. Then they also say the trustee cannot change or designate any beneficiaries under any retirement plan. And that's fine. A lot of people don't want the ability for others to change beneficiaries of a plan. Do keep in mind, though, if you wanted someone to be able to change beneficiaries on a retirement plan, remember we had that emailer not too long ago, Chris, who, under a power of attorney, wanted to change a beneficiary form for his mother, and then it all blew up and it didn't work. Do recognize it's difficult to change beneficiary anyways for someone, and it would require very specific language in a power of attorney, not a trust, because the trust doesn't own the IRA and the trust isn't acting as an agent. You would need a power of attorney form at the custodian where the IRA is being held, specifically granting the power to someone to change beneficiaries. If you want to be able to do that, you got to pay attention. Don't do anything boilerplate. Get a hold of your IRA custodian. Ask them, what type of power of attorney do I have to put together to grant someone the ability to change a beneficiary if I am still alive but incapacitated? Okay, that's all I want to say on that. But look at this next section, Chris. Distributions from qualified retirement plans paid to the marital trust. It seems to me a marital trust, folks, is just the name of a type of trust that sometimes spouses will put together. You often see them in blended family situations. He never mentioned to us that this was a blended family situation. So if it is a blended family situation, then I could see perhaps using a marital trust, but still not a huge fan of marital trusts, even in blended family situations. Because, Chris, what would happen if you have a IRA, the one spouse dies in this case. The primary beneficiary is a marital trust, and the only beneficiary of that marital trust, the only beneficiary, Chris, of that marital trust is the surviving spouse. Do we have a human?
Yes.
But does human beneficiary, but does that marital trust with a human beneficiary qualify as a human beneficiary for the IRA?
No.
No. Even if you have a only beneficiary is your spouse, it will not qualify as a human spouse, and your spouse must operate under the rules of the Secure Act, listener, now that the Secure Act is in, as a non-spouse beneficiary. Even though the beneficiary of the IRA is a marital trust, and even if the only beneficiary of the marital trust was your spouse, it's still not going to be considered a spouse, and the surviving spouse will have to operate under the rules of the Secure Act for a non-spouse beneficiary. And when would that IRA have to be closed, Chris?
In this particular case, it would qualify as a human, though, right? Not a so you'd get the 10 years? Or is with the marital trust, is it going to be a non-human in the 5-year?
It could qualify as a trust for a beneficiary of an IRA. No problem. There's no question about it. It crossed every T and dotted every I. It is a qualified see-through trust for purposes of an IRA beneficiary. The problem is still going to be it's not a human. It is not the spouse. You didn't marry the trust. You married your spouse. And even if the only beneficiary of that trust is your spouse and the trust qualifies, it will never be allowed to do what, Chris? The only thing a spouse can do and no one else.
Roll it into their own IRA. So you take that away from them, which is a very, very powerful option. They're not forced to do it, but most of the time they do because the advantages outweigh any potential disadvantages.
Absolutely. The whole idea of being, if I ever get married, it's because I want to roll my IRA. Actually, I'll be dead.
You want to roll theirs into yours. That's what
yes,
you, that's
roll
why
theirs
you're
going to
get married.
you're feeling sick? Okay, I'll get married. No. Oh, that's horrendous. No wonder I'm still single.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at, listener, by doing it from what I think, it's saying here that there's a marital trust. If you have a marital trust and you're the beneficiary of your wife's and your wife's the beneficiary of yours and you've named it as primary beneficiary of your IRAs, you cannot, as the surviving spouse, treat that IRA as your own. You will still have to operate under the rules of the Secure Act for a non-spouse beneficiary and close that IRA within 10 years, as opposed to you're 42. What if you died next week and your spouse inherited it? She's a non-spouse beneficiary if it's a marital trust, and she'd have to close it. I don't know how old she is. Let's say she's 42. She'd have to close it by 52. Take all that money out. But if she was named herself and not a marital trust as primary beneficiary, no problem. She could take that IRA, turn it into her own, and keep it for the rest of her life, and then pass it on to the children. Or she can disclaim some of it, pass it on to the children as long as they were named contingent beneficiaries on the beneficiary form, And the children would have to take theirs out over 10 years, or they would have to begin the 10-year count when they reach the age of majority, if they're not already the age of majority. We don't want to get too deep into the Secure Act on that. But she would be able to, any money in the IRA she kept for herself, move it into her own IRA. So I'm wondering if there is a marital trust first. I don't know. Maybe the marital trust is contingent beneficiary. Maybe the spouse is primary and then it goes into the marital. I don't know. But if the marital is primary, do keep in mind you've lost the ability for the surviving spouse to move the inherited IRA into their own and treat it as their own. They will instead, generally speaking, have to close it within 10 years. But then it says this, Chris, if the marital trust becomes the beneficiary of any death benefits under any qualified retirement plan, and I believe that would apply for IRA as well, even though it's not a qualified retirement plan. I do believe they mean IRA as well. Qualified retirement plan, each year, follow this, Chris, each year, beginning with the year of my death, my trustee shall, not may, shall withdraw at least the greater of the net income earned on the marital trust's share of the qualified plan during the year, the required minimum distribution required to be withdrawn from the trust's share of the plan. So the trustee must remove
the greater of.
Yes. Yeah. Must remove the greater of. Under the Secure Act, Chris, beginning in the year of death, what is the required minimum distribution?
Zero that year. So there's an issue of very little coming out, possibly, but also still this greater of issue. What if the account skyrocketed in value in 1 year? It would force a big, giant distribution that year that you couldn't control.
Well, it says net income, so it would have to have been some type of income-producing asset inside the trust.
Oh, so it's not growth in the account.
No, not growth, okay. But net income.
I'm just trying to follow along as you read it, since I don't have it in front of me. So
what I'm trying to explain, listener, and again, I don't know. My gut tells me the marital trust is primary, the way this is worded.
And why would you want to treat a spouse so poorly? They have the advantage of potentially rolling that in and making it their own, and then, you know, treating it with all the advantages of the flexibility of having their own rather than just simply being a beneficiary, and you're stealing that away from them by running it through this marital trust.
Unless the marital trust is only contingent and the only beneficiaries of the marital trust are the children. I don't know, but normally I see a marital trust naming the spouse as well. So I could be totally wrong on this. I don't know.
There's a lot of layers to this. There was a lot of estate planning that went on with this. So hopefully there was actually the need for this type of complexity, because there's a lot of moving parts here. That's always a question I ask is, do you need all this complexity? If the answer is yes, then do it. If the only way to accomplish what you want is with all this complexity, maybe it must be done. But in most cases, I think a simpler solution is appropriate.
Yeah, this was not a simple solution.
No.
And here's why I think the marital trust was named as primary, not contingent. And plus, it's marital. Marital trust, I always think spouse. It continues. Oh, before I get to that, though, listener, just so you understand the issue here, the way this is written, there is no required minimum distribution anymore. There's just one required minimum distribution, and that is the entire IRA. It must be taken and closed by December 31st of the 10th year following your death. That's the only required minimum distribution. That's it. The way this is written, The IRS doesn't say you have to take it in year 10. You could take it whenever you want, but it must be fully closed. Now, do remember, and I talked about this on a prior show, the IRS has not released guidance on trusts under the Secure Act as beneficiary of IRAs. They promised they were going to do it this year. Don't hold your breath. I don't think it's going to happen. But they're supposed to be leaving us guidance. So their guidance may be totally different than what we're talking about. I just want to throw that out there. There are no required minimum distributions, listener. So the way this is written, nothing is coming out for your wife. There are none, except in year 10. So does this mean in year 10, the whole thing gets closed and sent to your spouse? I don't know. Look what the next paragraph says, Chris. My trustee may withdraw additional amounts from the marital trust's share of the plan. And what they mean by plan, listeners, is the IRA or the 401k. As my trustee deems to be advisable, but only if the dispositive terms of the trust authorize my trustee to immediately distribute all withdrawn amounts as provided in this subsection. So that is definitely saying if you take anything out of the IRA, in English it's saying it must immediately go through the trust, must immediately pass out. There's not much flexibility there, listener. So if you were looking for protection and control, this language doesn't give that. Doesn't give much flexibility. It gives flexibility in the sense the trustee can decide if they want to take money out of the trust, the IRA. But if they do, it must immediately pass out to the beneficiary. Look who the beneficiary, Chris, is. My trustee shall immediately, not may, shall. Which means there's no negotiation, there's no flexibility with the word shall, Chris. Mm-hmm. My trustee shall immediately distribute all amounts withdrawn to my wife. This was set up to be primary beneficiary, Chris, of his IRA. It has to be. And by doing that, listener, please understand, even if your wife is the only beneficiary of that trust, you didn't marry the trust, you married a woman. It will never be considered a spousal beneficiary. Your spouse must close that IRA within 10 years of death of you. Had you just named your wife, she could have moved it to her own IRA and let it stay open for the rest of her life and then pass to your kids. That's why I think this was made to be primary beneficiary of his IRA. You see how I came to that conclusion?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then it says, only if my wife is then deceased, my trustee shall. Not may, shall. Shall is very powerful. That's no discretion with the word shall, folks. Discretion, you want to know if you have a discretionary trust? Look for the word may. You want to know if you have a conduit or non-discretionary trust? Look for the word what, Chris?
Shall.
Shall. If my wife is then deceased, my trustee shall instead distribute to the remainder beneficiary the amount that would have been distributed to my wife. I'm guessing the remainder beneficiaries are going to be his three kids.
Kids, yeah.
This trust would receive no stretch out. Remember, your wife, her rules under the Secure Act, listener, never changed.
Right. There's still all the advantages of a spouse.
It's only the non-spouse beneficiaries who got bent over under the Secure Act. They have to close it within 10 years of inheriting it. Even if it's a Roth. Under the Secure Act, a beneficiary has never changed from the old rules. They can keep your IRA open and not take anything out until the year you would have turned 72, and then they only have to take out required minimum distributions. Very few people do that, but they're given the ability. Most will take that and do what with it? Move it to their own. The only time they would do the latter I just described, Chris, if your wife is 42 and you predeceased her, She wouldn't want to move it into her own IRA right away. Why is that, Chris?
In case she needs some access to it before she turns 59 and a half.
Exactly. Because if she moved it to her own, it's now hers. And if you're younger than 59 and a half and take money out of an IRA, there's a 10% penalty. So she would leave it as a beneficiary IRA, not worrying at all about the 10-year rule because she's the spouse.
Yep.
And she can just take money out of that IRA as she needs until she's 59 and a half. Then she would move it to her own IRA. Naming a marital trust as beneficiary and her as beneficiary of the marital trust. And now we know, listeners, I didn't give away the secret until now, Chris. She's not the only beneficiary of the marital trust, is she?
No.
Because the subsequent beneficiaries, if she dies, it clearly says the money will be passed immediately to the remainder beneficiaries, which I'm guessing are the children. So the way you have it now, if you died at 42, and let's just say your wife is also 42, your entire IRA has to be closed within 10 years and paid out. Mm-hmm. The ability for your wife to be able to treat it as her own or treat it as a beneficiary IRA just sitting there and not worry about any 10-year rule at all is lost. Okay, that's about all I can get into because I ran pretty long on this. I don't think I'll be able to get to Section C. But Section C just continues to go on. Well, it does say... Now, this goes a little bit deeper. I would have to continue this Q&A show to get into that. I can't talk about Section C quickly, and I believe we have to wrap up, do we not?
Yeah, we're tight now. So,
anyways, listener, I hope you all didn't find this to be boring. I hope you learned from it. Don't create a trust unless you are absolutely, positively certain you need a trust. If you go to an estate planning attorney looking to help your children avoid probate as your main thing and to name guardianship in case both you and your spouse died together, that's great. You went in looking for a moped and you walked out with a Tesla. I thought that was a pretty good analogy, but maybe yeah. Not.
No, it was decent. Way too advanced, way too complicated for the case.
For what you needed.
In a lot of circumstances. I didn't hear anything that he mentioned that were particular concerns of his that led me to believe he needed this monstrosity of a multiple trust setup. But maybe there's more to the story.
There could be. There could be more to this than we know. You need to really be asking yourself, listener, what it is you're trying to accomplish. If truly all that you were trying to do was guardianship, you do that in a will. You don't even need a trust to name guardianship. And just recognize when you name guardianship, it's more of a suggestion than a requirement. The courts will still ultimately decide who will raise your children.
They put a lot of weight.
They do. They put a tremendous amount of weight on guardianship, but it's not etched in stone. But he mentioned guardianship, Chris, and avoiding probate. Your IRAs and 401ks will already avoid probate.
Right.
Just by naming beneficiaries on the beneficiary form.
And not naming your estate.
And yeah, never name your estate. But you created a trust to accomplish two things that could have been accomplished with a beneficiary form and verbiage in a will. Now you have this trust. And you have this trust as beneficiary of your IRA, which could mess up a lot of things that you gave up. And you now, he said, I want to know how the Secure Act would have impacted. If you never had a trust, listener, if you just had your spouse as beneficiary of your IRA, the Secure Act didn't affect you at all.
Right.
Because spouses were not impacted by the Secure Act. Non-spouses were. Now, you did express interest and concern if both of you died at the same time for guardianship. The Secure Act will affect that if both you and your wife die, because now your children would have to close it within 10 years, or they'd have to wait till they got to the age of majority and then close it within 10 years. We talked about that in the past. Mm-hmm. So true, that is an issue, but a trust isn't going to fix that. It's not going to fix that at all. So I just don't know why he has the trust.
Well, a trust would fix it going to the kids within that period of time, but it's going to come at the cost of an immense cost of income taxes.
But do keep in mind what would have happened even if you didn't have the trust. The guardian, who you're naming in the will and hopefully will be appointed as the court, would then open up custodial IRAs for your children. And they would control them until the children reach the age of majority. And then those IRAs become your children's. Even if you wanted to try to protect that from happening at the age of majority, the best you could have gotten was 10 years.
Right.
That's the best. Instead, hopefully, the guardian could have convinced the children at the age of majority not to close the IRA, to keep it open for 10 more years, that's what mom and dad wanted. That's the only thing you could have achieved with a trust, was to force the children into keeping their share for 10 years past the age of majority.
Or past that, Jim. If it paid into the trust, if the trust was set up and that was their number one goal, to have it in there, they could have it as a trust that paid it out over their lifespan.
True.
But it's going to come at a huge cost.
Taxes.
Because the trust is going to have to recognize all that income that gets thrust out during that 10-year period, best case scenario that you just described. So I was just saying it could happen. You could do it that way, but you have to recognize the cost of doing it that way, which would be enormous income tax implications.
Chris is right. You could have made it a discretionary trust, and when it pays out after 10 years...
It sits in there. What's left?
What's left. Because by then, who knows where income taxes will be.
Right.
Whatever the
right.
highest marginal rate is. Right now, it's 37. It's going up to 39.6. Mm-hmm.
Plus state, if there's a state income tax.
Plus state and the 3 percentage point surtax. If that passes, it hasn't passed yet. If a trust receives more than $100,000 of income. Remember, every dollar coming from your IRA and 401k, that is not Roth IRA and 401k assets, but any dollar coming from a traditional 401k or traditional IRA is income. If it's greater than $100,000, you're going to throw another 3 percentage point tax on top of the 39.6 and on top of the state taxes. I don't live in Hawaii, but I bet you state taxes in Hawaii are pretty damn high or kind of high. It's an expensive place to live. So you could lose a lot. That's why I wouldn't use a trust. There's other suggestions I would have that goes way beyond the scope of today's show.
Yeah.
Anyways, listen, I hope I gave you some food for thought. The Secure Act would not have impacted you and your wife. It may impact your children. But the way you have this now is a marital trust as beneficiary of the IRA and your spouse a beneficiary of the marital trust, you just subjected her to the Secure Act and forced something that could have stayed open over the rest of her life to be closed and paid out within 10 years. That's because of the Secure Act.
Yep.
So anyways, I just wanted to throw that all out there. Hopefully people found this interesting. If not, oh well. I like it. I mean, it's just... Trust is so complicated, and I wish I had a good analogy. You're using something way more complicated. It's like trying to use a wicked expensive program that a pocket calculator can do. You know, you're trying to add 2 + 2, but you're breaking out an Excel spreadsheet.
Right.
I don't know if that's a good analogy, but I don't see
I've heard worse.
Yeah, I've heard worse from me too. But the two reasons. You said you went to the attorney. You went to the attorney for two reasons. I don't see this trust fixing either of those two things.
Yep.
All right. That's all I got to say.
Perfect. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening in to another Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. If you have an idea for a show, I don't know if this person really intended it for to be in a topic for the show. But if you have a topic idea for the EDU show, we always like to take those into consideration. We'll do something completely different next week. Last week we had Wade Fow on. This week we did this kind of spontaneous trust conversation. We'll have some other random EDU event next week. We always have our Q&A show as well. So if you have questions that you'd like us to cover in the Q&A format, please go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a contact form. You can submit the questions that way, or you can email Jim directly, jim@jimhelps.com. So take care, Jim. Stay warm. Snow is a-coming.
Well, it is. I'll be leaving tomorrow, as you know.
You're going to probably miss it then.
I will be driving one step ahead. It's not going to be much snow out here anyways. Mountains will get a little bit. A little dusting, but mountains will get a little bit of it. But I will be driving, folks, beginning tomorrow, heading towards Kentucky and southern Ohio. I'll let you know how all that all goes. So when we broadcast next, I should... Well, actually, no, this Friday's... show. I think Chris is doing Alona. May have a special guest on this Friday's Q&A show.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
Yeah. Okay.
So, thanks, everybody. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.